Ladies and gents, welcome back to another Engineers podcast. Today I'm joined by Dimitra Racina, who's a really seasoned CPTO. And today we're going to be talking a little bit about the emergence of that role in the market and what that actually means and how you can go about structuring your teams. So as always, we're going to do an intro. Dimitra, lovely to have you on board. Do you want to give us some background into you and some of your career and run us through that?
Sure. First of all, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to do a podcast with you. And I know your audience and the speakers that you have invited previously have been quite navigating very interesting topics. From my side, I'm very keen in speaking about CPTO. That's something that I have been doing over the last, I would say, 5 years almost, maybe more. I have changed. I think this has been the third time I have been acting as a CPTO. It's a role that speaks a lot to my values about how to build product software. I have started from the engineering side in my career. My studies were pointing towards hardware and electronics and that type of engineering. I landed on the software side of it and never looked back. But more challenges and interesting topics came my way. And I started combining engineering with product quite early on, getting onto the product side from a technical product management perspective and running a full R&D department, being a technical director in delivering value to customers. So it was very quickly in my career, my exposure to business and bringing that closer to me than I would think somebody that is working internally on a product as an engineer. And that led me quite to interesting journeys, taking both the responsibility of product and engineering on leadership roles, acting as a CTO, CPO, and lately the CPTO responsibilities. Maybe one last thing to add to that. As I take on more long-term roles, I often take also interim and fractional roles, and I try to bring the transformation into product engineering organizations to the level that they allow me. In the interesting and scaling phases that the companies go through.
The level that they allow me is an interesting point. I do want to touch on, where do you think the emergence of the role has come from? Because it's a recent thing. It feels that way anyway.
Maybe less recent as a trend. I think the signs for it have come quite a long way back. At Forbes, the merging of a CPTO as an article went out on 2020. So it's been a little bit longer, I think, for the market to catch up with it. But today, if you would look on LinkedIn and search for CPTO or CTPO, depending on the flavor, you will see actually many people transitioning to this type of role. And I think the reason for that is the understanding of the necessity to collaborate deeply for product and technology in order to deliver customer value and business value alongside with the innovation and the speed that needs to take place. It basically positions that cooperation on a strategic level rather than on operational level. And I think that's really a sign you will see, especially on scale-ups. I will name one, I would say, very well-known person that to my surprise also had that role. That's Marty Kagan, who has been a CPTO at a company, and he is a partner at Silicon Valley Product Group. Very influential person, really. I think has changed the way product and engineering teams operate together.
Okay. I'd love to dive into that. And Silicon Valley Product Group, it's really funny you say that. I was lying in bed yesterday evening and I was flicking through them. And actually some of those names popped up. So bizarre. But I think touching back on that point of teams collaborating with one another and really understanding how the structure of an organization can change with the emergence of this role. Let's say emergence, but I think, like you say, it's a very strategic decision to have someone in this place. How does it change the structure of teams and how maybe they work with one another?
I think it elevates the conversation on a C-level. On becoming an outcome-based organization. That's really, I think, the change, because nothing changes from the fact that you still need the expertise and the craft of engineering and the expertise and the craft of product or design teams and individual leaders operationally organizing that work. It's the same as you have a CTO, but of course you still have an architect as part of the mix, right? In the same sense, you would have a CPTO, but you would probably also have a head of product and a head of engineering or VP product, VP of engineering to operationalize those strategic initiatives that you decide on executive level. I think what changes is the level of cooperation that you see within the teams, and perhaps to the level that really gets to the chance to be implemented, because it does take a transformation for the organization to adopt this, is the fact that the teams become even more cross-functionally balanced. So both sides get to have what they need in a closer proximity for them to operate and deliver on the outcome that is expected from them. So I think it's a positive change, making the teams even more empowered to deliver on the outcome.
Okay, that's really interesting. And I think we've spoken about this winning by design, winning mentality. How do you think that empowerment actually helps teams perform better?
Indeed, we talk about the winning by design, and I use that methodology myself to introduce a collaborative way and how cross-functional we can come together to influence the different phases of the customer journey in making the decision to commit to a product and continue using the product and expand even the usage of the product. So the way that it benefits those that actually do work with this type of structure is that basically you make faster decisions. There is a transparency towards goals. There is not hidden agendas on where to invest, what type of resources. You move away from a project minded organization to an outcome minded organization. And I would say that's probably the biggest win, because that each component, each department in the organization is not siloed. They don't own individually just a slice of the pie, but together, you are putting together a very successful recipe for winning, because all parts that actually contribute to the winning are present at the moment. You don't have delays to align. So I would say more effective investments in the efforts that are strategic, and maybe a good after effect from that is that the depth that you're creating as an in the engineering side is not handled as a crime or as an unfortunate incident. It will be handled and justified as an investment because there's actually somebody in the board to articulate in the favor of it and position it on a business context. And that makes a huge difference for the customers that typically get to hurt from a possibly lack of quality that a debt could bring.
Yeah, okay. Where do you think the role of a CPTO is most seen, if you like? Where is it most prevalent?
I think overall in the organization, because the role of a CPTO is actually to bring closer product and engineering. And in doing so is partnering also well with the other parts of the organization, whether that be marketing or sales. I would say it goes a little bit hand in hand with the other trend you will see for product-led growth, seeing the product as part of the growth engine. But I would definitely see it on all parts. So a product manager gets to access their counterparts in engineering as they make decisions, so that the decisions they make realizable, the realistic targets to go after. They build something that speaks to the business, to the engineer, to the designer, to the customer. Everything actually gets on the same line when you're working this way.
As a CPTO, you can
express that in their world, which actually has a tremendous value.
Yeah, got you. How do you think it actually changes the role, if anything, of a software engineer on the ground or their mindset if it's not the role?
I would say the biggest change is that the engineer starts to become part in the conversations on what to build and how, not only just how to build it, but also what to build. Because the CPTO is just simply an organizational structure, a little bit in the hierarchy, but that is translated also further to the teams themselves. So an engineer, when it's properly implemented, is part of the conversation. It gets a seat on the table. They're not mercenaries to execute just what they're told. They're become part of the mission. They're going after an outcome in a collaborative way. So that empowerment that you get to have from the within executive level cascades down, and actually you get to be involved in the product decisions, and you really embed in that the explanation of the whys of the growth. It's a commitment of the investment that you are part of.
Yeah. If you were to walk into a new fractional role, what do you think the top one or two things you would like to do to try and help an organization change their mindset to implement to this kind of structure?
I would say the first thing that I normally do is understand how decisions are being made. How is prioritization done? Are there business cases that support those decisions, and whether it's evidence-based? When you have that mindset, then you can start steering towards an outcome. If you just build because that's what you're being told to build with inadequate justification, then I think there's a lot of work to be done to go away from that type of mindset and allow the different expertise to contribute in making those decisions in an informed way. Data has a big part of it. Transparency has a big part of it. In a fractional role, that's why I say it depends on how much I would be allowed to influence that, is the question, are they willing to make a commitment to transition to an outcome-based organization? And if that's the case, then there's a lot of things to change on the way that the company operates.
Yeah, I think I look at it, and we're hopefully going to talk in the next couple of months, just how powerful this can be for users or customers. But I think the organizational structure change to help software engineers think more like innovators and builders and being more product minded, it can only really affect your users and customers. Right, wrong, and maybe why?
100% correct. It's because product designers and engineers all carry a piece of the puzzle of how the product is built and what can you do with the product. It's not unlikely that an engineer may come with a great solution that simply doesn't come across somebody that doesn't have that level of affinity with the product itself. So having the diversity of inputs in the decision-making process, I think it's super valuable. And having people that are motivated and aligned and carry with you that decision can only have a benefit for the customer, because together you're striving to serve the needs of the customer. And one not unusual thing to go for is to implement continuous discovery habits within your teams, because the teams can actually operate in a way, in a more coordinated way.
Yeah, continual evidence. I've started to speak to people a lot more about this topic, and I spoke to a company a few weeks back about experimentation culture, and it's becoming more and more a thing. Really understanding user, consumer behaviors, mindset, how they do things. And that's why I think it can only really give your software engineers so much power to build the right thing, really being at the face of what a customer's doing, how they may be using your platform. Just being really, really involved.
Absolutely. And it's not only at that moment to be able to provide input on what you have built, but also being able to maintain knowledge and learnings from experiments that have executed and did not bring the validation perhaps that you would have hoped they would bring. So understanding also what doesn't work, being able to move along the product closer to what the customer needs, is a continuous journey. It's not you build, you release, and off you go.
Yeah.
That's why it's a product, right? It needs to continue evolving, and being continuously discovering what is the need that is in alignment with the business growth ambitions. I think that's really the sweet spot in how teams can deliver better products for businesses that actually can serve the customer.
Okay. Why don't you think organizations are adopting this organizational structure?
Lots of reasons I can think of. It is not unusual that people feel comfortable owning things, right? In any company I have gone, there is a conversation about who owns what metric, how do you influence what. I try to neutralize this and actually showcase that, in fact, it's about understanding what the product is. It's an inside out approach. If you consider the product in marketing and product, and then customer success, sales, giving a lot of boost in the beginning but then disappearing afterwards, if you think of that journey like that for the customer, that's really an inside-in approach. An outside-in approach is how the customer understands the product. And the customer understands the product in its totality from the moment that they start researching your material, what is the product. So it is your marketing collateral and assets that you present to them. Actually, the demo or the trial or the freemium experience that they're getting to be onboarded on the product. And then also the level of support they receive afterwards, after the purchasing decision. They don't care who built what or who looks at what KPI. So if you see it like that, then you understand that putting silos on those KPIs is nonsense. And there is an influence that you can bring on the customer journey if you combine forces. I will make a bridge there and say that I like combining a winning by design approach, looking at the customer journey in a bow tie funnel with a land and expand approach on the phases of the customer. And then trying to make transparent for everybody what is the role of product and how the product can partner with each stakeholder in that journey in order to deliver to the customer the experience in the phase that they are. And I do so by layering decision trees, which is something that Teresa Torres speaks quite a lot and advocates on, and continuously discovering how to navigate the problem area in a way that speaks to that to the business growth.
Okay, interesting. You touched on where product are in this journey. If I do ask a dim question, whereabouts are product in this journey or in the team structure?
Product management is, of course, a part of that mix, right? When we say a cross-functional team, product management is part of that. And product manager is the party that starts to consolidate all these inputs, make sure to articulate the hypothesis in a very clear way, very concise way, so that they can recruit the different views that will challenge that hypothesis in order to get to an outcome that actually addresses the problem of the customer or the need of the customer in a business effective way. So that's what the role of the product manager is. In the companies where I have worked, I'm introducing the product manager as maybe a mediator in bringing those views together. So that's how I would see it.
Interesting. It would be great to take some advice from you and your rise to C-level. What do you think are a couple of golden nuggets that you could share with people that you've learned along your way in your career that would be really valuable for other people who probably aspire to get to the level that you're at the moment?
I think the biggest thing that made for me the change was the realization between being and doing. So when I was moving from T to P, from technologist to a product person, I was executing product management. I was doing product management. And I was part of management teams and wearing the hat, perhaps of the product representative in those teams. But I was doing without being, because I was not speaking the language of my counterparts in the boards. And the language of my counterparts is the language of the business and the language of finance. So for me, the biggest transition was really when I spent time, I invested in myself to learn finance, to build solid business cases, financial modeling, because you cannot defend the strategy if you cannot justify investments versus a return. And if you just name people that you will put in teams, then I think you are underservicing the business, but also the customer, because the investments then are underestimated for what it is that you can do for them.
I think the self-awareness on that is pretty incredible, you obviously had the capability to understand what language you needed to speak at a board level. And a lot of people who are on boards are very interested in the financial growth of the business. How did you go and learn financial modeling?
First of all, I was not aware of it in the beginning. Yeah. I failed dramatically in my first encounters with the board. Yeah. And investors, going in there with a CTO perspective in presenting to them what we were doing. But I became more aware of it from the fact that I couldn't get through what it is that I wanted us to focus on. So it made a huge difference for me. I was very lucky to have a mentor that said to me, Dimitra, you're speaking to them, but you're speaking another language, right? The CFO has a very different perspective of what you're saying to them than the CEO, and the different thing from the CRO. You need to understand their different perspectives and address their needs in the conversation. So I was made aware of it by having a great mentor to point me to it. And then on, I started reading books. A great book I as an introduction that I recommend is called Financial Intelligence, and introduce people to simply P&L and just the basics of finance. I urge people to have conversations with their CFO or any finance manager in their company to really understand when do we have revenue recognition and what does it mean, and what does it really mean to when we say COGS, what goes in there, right? So really understand what those KPIs are from a financial perspective. And then I took a year taking the role as a VP product operations to set up product operations in a scale-up that was Binder. And in that journey, I was tasked to produce product financials, so attribute cost and return on investment from product components. So we could really slice down all KPIs to the level of component and be able to make informed decisions for further investments. Really, really interesting experience.
I think you've also touched on something there that I don't think you meant to touch on. You had a mentor.
Yes.
Which I think is really important, by the way, subconsciously for your growth, to help you navigate someone that's been there, been through some of those pains, understands the challenges that maybe you can't see at that time and can point you in the right direction. But I think that the three takeaways for me would have been, upskilling yourself, mentor, the role of, was it being versus doing or doing versus being?
Same thing. I think it's the same, right?
Same thing. Yeah. But also whether you deem that as, or whether the Binder role was a sideways move or a different move, but really just to get a very different perspective to go up, that everything just isn't as linear as one way it's vertical, there's only way up.
That's exactly actually it. And that's the reason I take fractional or interim roles. I see them as a way of expediting my learning. I do confuse recruiters, I have to say. They do not know how to position me.
Yeah.
But I find taking short-term assignments on areas where you want to improve your skill sets even more, to go in depth, gives you that time of focus to learn a skill and really become much better at it. And that was a very conscious decision to take that role at Binder. Not just to read about product operations, but to be accountable for it and learn, take the time to go in the depth that item of knowledge requires. And I have to say that I learned to do that quite early in my journey, there was a period where, after being with a company for 7 years, I decided to have my own startup. And in order to fund my startup, I started doing consulting.
Okay.
And I was very blessed to start to be introduced to do due diligence on behalf of investors.
Okay.
And what that meant was, for a very short amount of time, I got to go in extreme depths on architectural topics, on technology choices, on product decisions, and product business alignment decisions. And that taught me that those short assignments are a great way to expedite your learnings. And that's why I continue doing some interim and structural roles afterwards.
Good for you. Good for you. I think we've covered everything that we wanted to cover regarding the role of a CPTO. I think, like you say, you know, you could type into LinkedIn now and find a lot of people doing this role. I think I've seen the emergence of it, but only really because my eyes have been open to it very recently. It's going to be really interesting to track what you do in a fractional and interim setting. I wish you all the best of luck. For businesses who are seeking an organizational change or difference of structure, 1,000,000%, I'll go and recommend you. Do not worry about that. But thank you for coming to join us. Massively appreciate it. And I think it's really good understanding for our audience who are mainly software engineering focused, 95%, give or take, to really understand, you know, the importance of what other structures are out there, you know, and how can they harness their skills in a better way.
I really appreciate the opportunity to speak about something that I'm really passionate and get to meet you better, and hope that triggered a bit of the interest for people to dive into topics that are not their everyday choice.
No,
that opens opportunities.
For absolute sure. And I think for everyone listening, there's links to everything that we've discussed for people to have a look, Demetra's page, and any other relevant information that she sees fit, and likes, shares, support. It's all massively appreciated. And follow Demetra, follow some of her work, connect with her on LinkedIn, and keep a close eye on the emergence of the CPTO role. Difference of structures. And from F1Net Engineers, it's bye for now.
Hey guys, thanks for watching this episode. Massively appreciate you listening and checking in with us. If you want to find out more about us and what we're doing, please check us out on social media. What we're trying to do at Engineers is build a community to drive knowledge sharing and experiences. On Twitter, we can be found at engineers.io. It's no underscore. We've also got a website, which is engineers.io. These links will all be posted in the description. Any feedback and comments are massively appreciated. We're always looking to improve on where we can. Thanks, guys.